with retired major of the United States Army, military political expert Stanislav Krapivnikov. Hello, Stanislav.
Hello. Yeah.
Stanislav, first and most important question. How do you assess the military situation on the battlefield now in the context of our special military operation in Ukraine?
Well, assuming this is not a war, this is still a special military operation, even if Peskov said it is a war. Legally, it remains a special military operation. There are legal limits on what the armed forces can do and how they can conduct this conflict. Of course, in the sense that two armies are fighting, it is a war. But in the legal sense, it is still not a war, which many people find hard to understand. These are very different legal spheres, how the state itself can act toward its citizens and on the battlefield. Overall, in the areas that were chosen, we are moving forward, just not at the speed we would like. Let United States not kid ourselves, and there are big problems because of enemy drones. So that issue remains on the battlefield. After all, more than 50 countries are producing drones. Well, all the countries of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization and many additional allies or vassals of the United States. So we are fighting them, of course. We are not completely alone on this battlefield, but for the most part, it is United States who are holding it. We have some help from the Chinese, but it is limited. More commercial or political than direct military support. Well, we had help from the Iranians, whom we are now helping in return, and from North Korea. Aside from volunteers who come to United States from different countries, whom we respect greatly, they are just a handful. You cannot say whole armies are being sent. And the states those volunteers come from, of course, take very strong measures to eliminate these people if they go. They are immediately declared enemies of the people. Their families are targeted. They try to crush them, seize property, and use every repressive tool. That is what the West and similar countries can apply to their own citizens. That is a lot. Well, overall, we are moving forward. This is proceeding the way it should. Yes, one would like more, and we have the capability. But again, we are not at war, so we cannot use all the means with which we could simply wipe out large parts of the battlefield.
I see. Yes. Stanislav, you are a retired senior officer of the United States Army. I assume you have many sources there in the United States and more broadly in the West. Hear many experts like Kazin and Fersen and many others say the West is on the verge of some large-scale crisis. Can you, as someone who lived there for many years, describe your point of view? What crisis is the West rapidly approaching? Or is that an exaggerated assessment that the West is approaching a crisis? Maybe you have a different point of view?
Well, I am no longer in the reserves. I am a retired officer.
Yes, retired, yes.
First thing, there is no single entity called the West. There are different countries in that grouping, and each country has its own major internal problems. Some countries are in complete catastrophe. Others are on the brink with room to recover. Well, nobody is doing well. Let United States put it that way. There is great fear in Europe. For the European Union, Brussels, the unelected authority, it is a kind of dictatorship over those 26 countries. Understand that for them, the special military operation is a wonderful thing. It is the best thing that could have happened. because under the cover of the special military operation, they seized power over almost all the countries. Hungary was one of the last that resisted, but Orban was removed. Money was flowing through Ukraine, while the Ukrainians, the security service of Ukraine, were committing terrorist attacks inside Hungary. And the money went from Brussels, through Kyiv, to Orban's opponent. Right now, more than 90% of legislative proposals come from the European Parliament itself, not from individual countries. Economically, they have squeezed everyone there very hard. The repressive measures right now are just insane. For example, starting with the 17th sanctions package, they began including citizens of the European Union itself, like journalists. Not only journalists who have long lived and worked in Russia, like Anna Lep, who was sanctioned, had a criminal case opened and her bank accounts closed. Her parents are divorced. She had brought her mother here. And likewise, journalists who live in Germany itself and in other countries. There is, wait, I will say his name, I do not remember it, 1 minute. I can say, okay, I will tell you now. Hussein Adagru is a German citizen, born in Germany, but of Turkish descent. At first, he covered what was happening in Palestine, and he spoke a bit about Ukraine. I think he was put under sanctions in the 19th or 20th sanctions package. The most striking thing, if you read those sanctions, is that this is disciplinary punishment. He did nothing illegal. He exercised his right to speak. So they punished him to try to correct his behavior. He did not break any laws. They say he misused his right to free speech. What does that mean? In Germany, they banned him from buying, selling, working, or receiving gifts. In other words, nobody can give him anything. They closed his accounts and his wife's accounts. They have three children, two of them twins, who were born only a year and a half ago.
He was barely begging to be allowed to withdraw 500 euros a month from his account, which is effectively impossible to live on in Berlin. Just so they would not starve, in that sense. And they have just closed his elderly mother's accounts as well. And again, he did not break any laws. He simply, according to the dictatorship in Brussels, misused his given rights. These are the kinds of repressive measures they use against any voice that speaks against Brussels. Because for Brussels, the only thing they can unite everyone around is the Red, what used to be called the Red Scare. And frankly, that is fear of Russia. They say the Russians are coming. I have friends in Ireland who say the state tells them the Russians will cross the Irish Sea and murder and rape all the Irish. That is the level it has reached. The difference between the United States and the Jews of the 1930s is that we have a large country and a large army. In the end, it is a bit harder to drive Russians toward liquidation and extermination. If they had the opportunity, they would do it. Well, that is the European Union. That is who we are up against. Economically, they are all in terrible shape. Some are better, some worse. And the main fear behind these repressive measures is civil war breaking out in any country. And here, everything is also on the brink of civil war. England, which officially is not in the European Union since Brexit, but which liberal elites are trying to pull back in through the back door, is the most exposed. Either England or Ireland. Partly in Ireland, this is because Ukrainian refugees are getting everything, on top of already very high migration. and in the last 10 years, not 30 or 40 like in other countries, in less than 10 years they have simply been overwhelmed. Per capita, Ireland has accepted more refugees from Ukraine than any country in the European Union. The only country that accepted more is Russia. There have already been major disturbances because people are simply fed up. They are living in poverty. The economy is falling. There is no money for the people who pay taxes. While others receive free housing, free education, pensions, health care, and many, many other things, with cash in their pockets. Well, the same thing is happening in other countries. On top of that, you could say men from large parts of Europe are now being deported as cannon fodder to the armed forces of Ukraine and similar forces. More meat, the better. Ukrainian men. The only place a Ukrainian can survive in Europe now. They will move in a wave. It has already begun. Either flee to Russia, Belarus, or somewhere in Africa to survive. Because soon, before they start actively mobilizing their own people, they will be sending Ukrainians, and they have already started. If you believe the Ukrainian foreign ministries, they say the French have already handed over 40,000 such men. Now, on any pretext in Poland and Germany, they are arresting and deporting them. But deport them where? Straight into the hands of the Ukrainian armed forces or the security service of Ukraine. And that is how they are being handed over. And now, they are reviewing a draft law and simply mass deporting men.
So they will be forced to defend Ukraine, which no one wants to defend because it is not a country anyone wants. The majority are ready to die. So oligarchs can pocket even more money. Well, that process is happening now. So we are now standing on the brink. And one reason they will do this is because it reduces internal pressure. And this serves exactly that purpose. While they prepare for a major war. Of course, not the entire European Union, and not all of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization will go along with this. You have to read the North Atlantic Treaty Organization's Article 5. It does not mean everyone rushes off to fight. Article 5 means there will be consultations and everyone helps as they can. Some will send a tank division, some will send helmets, and some will light a candle. Well, each country gets to decide that. Basically, there is a major crisis, because people in many countries are waking up to the reality. Quality of life is ruined. There is no future. They are overwhelmed by migrants replacing the local population, and many do not want to go and die under these conditions. The United States has big problems too. Donald Trump won the election because he was an exception, at least in theory, to that system. In the United States, there is really only one party with two wings, two umbrellas, a liberal umbrella and a conservative umbrella. Under those umbrellas are the Republicans and the Democrats, plus many small parties, regional parties. They are all labeled Republican or Democrat, but they differ greatly from each other within those parties. But the problem, again, is that those in power are effectively the same people. They are in Israel's pocket, in the pocket of the major military industry, in the pocket of big pharmaceutical companies, and in the pocket of anyone willing to pay. The Saudis thought they were in their pocket too, but it turned out they did not pay enough money. They either need to invest more or move away from it. I think the Israelis are investing a lot now because there are many billionaire Zionists. Interestingly, many of these people's children stand against them in the very protests opposing the genocide Israel is conducting in the surrounding territories. There is a big generational divide, and the Israeli lobby is now acting very boldly, trying quickly to embed itself within the American system, because it knows it has lost the support of its own Jewish youth in the United States, and broadly, American youth. They are mainly supported by 60-plus-year-old evangelical Christians. Well, they say money does not smell. So there is a big crisis here, too. Graham's death hit very hard, because he was one of the main people pushing this. A new candidate will certainly appear,
There are quite a few who are waiting to sign a contract with the devil, or have already signed, and are waiting their turn. So at least some light chaos is happening there right now. They will now split his portfolio among new faces, or familiar faces. Those are big problems. There are big crises, because again, in all these countries, there is no future for young people. There simply is none. There is no money for education, no money for jobs, no money for anything. The worst off are white young men, first and foremost, because they are still the majority. Bunny next to Prensov, warm Asian dollars in Chi. In all May Servini, Riselfs, is Sa, that an, when they have no future. A gender war starts. No future means no wife, no children, no job. And who holds the monopoly on lethal force? It is always young men. And when they are angry and see no prospects, that is when riots and even civil wars begin. You just need someone in leadership who can organize and steer them. Well, people like Hitler came to power. Similar things happened during the French Revolution and elsewhere. It does not take many. 10% is all you need, more than enough in any society to overturn the whole order. That is the way it is. So yes, war is a great thing for them. It benefits Russia. First, it lets them write off their debts, their domestic debts. Second, to silence their opponents, send them to the front, arrest them, shoot them, curfew. Those are the kinds of things. Yes, maybe we will not succeed. Because maybe a Russian missile will come and kill everyone, or Russian tanks will eventually arrive. Yes, that could happen. But if we do nothing, we will also not succeed. Well, that is the risk. These are the kind of people we are dealing with now. Rats backed into a corner have created their own chaos. The bomb they are now sitting on that mine, well, they are ready to do anything. And the worst thing is that, in interviews with sources close to power, these people have convinced themselves of their own propaganda. That is the scariest part. They have started believing their own bullshit. And you can no longer have rational conversations with them. Now,
Stanislav, you remember the United States in the 80s and 90s. When we recorded that episode some time ago, you told United States about your life in the United States back then. Obviously, if you compare the average American from the 80s and 90s to now, the quality of life you mentioned was much better then. Salaries were higher, life was more comfortable, your paycheck bought more, you could afford housing, property, cars. Tell me, from your perspective, having observed all this from the inside, if I remember correctly, in what year did you finally move away from the United States?
In 2010.
Yes, in 2010. When were the mistakes made? Or back then, in the 80s and 90s, was the United States already living off its future? Where did things go wrong?
Well, you could start in 1991. Which no one will ever tell an American.
It was the collapse and defeat of the Soviet Union, and the United States went in the wrong direction.
Yes, the collapse of the Soviet Union was a huge loss for the average American worker. That was the first major blow. Why? Because the alternative model that pushed Americans, and Europeans too, to make certain sacrifices for their societies disappeared. Second, because the big external enemy vanished, and American companies, with the help of the American state, the same elites, began to leave the United States. Before that, no one let them go easily, because who would release companies when those factories might be needed for a big war tomorrow? Where are you going to go? To China? they would not even be allowed into Mexico. But now everything changed. The gates opened. That is when they started developing China, because labor there was cheap above all. And that was what mattered. You could watch American towns, just small towns with one or two factories, see those factories close and everything fall apart. People were suddenly pushed from the middle class into poverty. It is like any factory. The difference is that in Russia it all happened very, very fast. A total collapse. But then, after 1999, it eventually began to turn around. In the United States, it did not turn around. At first, it did not happen so quickly, but it started to happen over the next 2 to 3 years. Factories began moving to Mexico. And then, they were called maquiladoras, I think. Those are zones where Mexican workers were allowed to work at American factories. All the production then went straight back to the United States. Then it moved to China, Vietnam, and so on. There was another blow. That, I think, was in 1995 or 1996. Bill Clinton repealed the Glass-Steagall Act. The Glass-Steagall Act, not a bill but a law, was introduced in 1929 or 1930, I believe. What was that for? It was meant to control the banking sector. Because before that, 1929 was the crash, and the Great Depression began in 1932. Until then, there were no limits on the banking sector in the United States, and we need to pay close attention and learn the lessons, because we also have a banking sector that wants to do whatever it wants. The banks were playing the markets, big money, until that money ran out, and then the massive crash came, and then there was a total collapse of the economy. Yes, some bankers threw themselves out of windows, but most still walked away very rich at the end of the day. Meanwhile, ordinary people were bankrupted. In 1996, the banking sector in the United States was about 5 to 6% of gross domestic product. The industrial sector was about 38% of gross domestic product. Now the banking sector is officially 23 to 24% of gross domestic product. In reality, closer to 30. And the industrial sector is under 16% of gross domestic product. Why? Because when they repealed the Glass-Steagall Act, which was a very good law, we should copy it.
If not outright nationalize the major banks, I am not a Marxist, but we have to be realistic. I mean the main banking sector. I am not talking about a small local bank in some village. The big difference is that with a small local private bank, the owners live in that village. They are invested in the village. Their interests are tied to the town's prosperity. Their children go to school with the same people they lend money to. Their interests are local. With big financial institutions that do not care whether the village survives, their goal is to make money as quickly as possible each quarter. They will not invest in a factory that will pay back in 5, 6, or 10 years. They want the money now. And what does that mean, and how is it done? It is very simple. You buy a company, close down its factory, and liquidate it. The money is in your hands. You get your quarterly bonus, and so on. Their interests are completely different. And this began to happen in the second half of the 1990s. Suddenly, all the savings banks were allowed to start playing on the stock market, with other people's money, of course. And the bankers just collected interest on putting that money in, that kind of thing. Whether people lost or not, the bankers themselves risk nothing. They gamble with the savings and pension funds of their own people and of other people's. And at the same time, they destroy the industry that those same people depend on, because it was a double blow.
on the one hand, factories started leaving. It got so absurd that insurers refused to cover the factories moving to China places in China in the 90s. Poor God knows what, some strange laws. And the United States government began insuring its oligarch friends who were shipping their factories abroad. Then financiers arrived, and industrial capitalism turned into financial capitalism. Financial capitalism is cannibalism of its own economy. These are astonishing forms of capitalism. It creates nothing. It only destroys. It creates debt. It creates corporate rating. It destroys the standard of living for 99% of the population. Even the mid-level and smaller oligarchs started getting poorer. Everyone gets poorer, while the financial sector and those who control it become the most powerful and start buying laws. Because when your sector is really a very small group of firms, for example, BlackRock, Goldman Sachs, invested in practically every corporation, you only need to look who owns which companies. It is terrifying that a very small group, as owners or part owners, is invested in almost everything. And that sector begins buying laws for itself. For example, consolidation in the United States was massive in the 90s and 2000s. If you go into a grocery store, we used to have 3 to 4 times more choice than in the United States. Easily. Maybe even more. If you look at all those brands and then check who owns them, you find only 4 or 5 big corporations that own almost all the brands in the United States. If you call that other savings errands in the Sachs, like, for example, Pepsi Cola, Coca-Cola, Johnson & Johnson, names like that. They bought everyone up. And then you look who invests in them. I now realize they are not the real owners either. Behind them stand the same BlackRock, the same Goldman Sachs, the same Bank of America. You suddenly realize a very small group of financiers owns everything. Absolutely everything. When the top 5% own 50% of all value in the United States, and 10% own 80%, and 90% of the people have nothing, no investments, only poverty. Well, this is of course an unstable system that cannot survive. And the banking sector, the large financial sector, so to speak, we saw this in England too. All the bets were placed on the City of London, not on manufacturing. You can very quickly see there are 3 sectors in which the state must be heavily involved and exercise control. Energy. Because without energy, no economy can function. If the energy sector grabs everything for itself, the whole economy will simply die. The military-industrial sector, because weapons need to be produced for the country, not for profit. In the United States, one of the main reasons weapons fail is that they are not made to actually fight. They are made so they can be endlessly repaired, and endless money is paid for that. And the 3rd sector is, of course, the large financial sector, which, if it starts sucking the lifeblood out of the economy, like the energy sector, can also destroy everything for everyone. And in its very narrow interests, it will do exactly that, if given the chance. And it has done so. We can see how it operates in different countries. So yes, those are the blows, and you cannot vote to change the system as it stands now. The same people who support Israel are the ones who control the finances. Like the same BlackRock, Think, Sionist, and other similar companies. So, well, United States foreign policy will not change. It is not for the benefit of the United States. It serves very narrow interests. People whose loyalties are, well, questionable, to say the least. These are not Henry Ford types. Yes, I know Ford was a Nazi, but even so, he invested a lot in his country. The same goes for the Rockefellers, who invested heavily in their time, whatever you want to say about them. There was, damn, I do not remember, an American oligarch in the late 19th century. Clayton or Claymore, I should check. His name starts with an S sound. His mission was to build a free library in every village. Those were the kind of people. And what about United States? We had the same thing. The Lenin Library was not built by the Bolsheviks. They just renamed it. It was built by a merchant. These were people who understood. I grew up in this country. It is my country. I give something back to it. Like a library for all of Moscow, a train station, things like that. Those 19th century oligarchs, most were religious. They knew sooner or later they would face God and have to answer for their deeds. So they tried to give back. I grew up in this society. It gave me a chance to get ahead. So I give back. This was not only in America. It was in Russia and across Europe, in many countries. You do not see those people anymore. In sound, the financial elite are bloodsuckers who just keep hoarding. Or they start insane projects like, let United States reduce the population on this planet. These insane projects bring nothing good for ordinary people. That is a completely different mentality. But that is what hit America in the 1990s and the 2000s. The country reached the level of wealth it had, and it is now exhausted. So what do we do now? There is simply nothing left for the next generation.
Stanislav, I wanted to ask one more question, and this whole situation with Epstein's Island, am I right that similar things happened in America before? There was no internet before, the world was less transparent, but these kinds of stories go back centuries. Apparently, they come from Britain, from 100 years ago, even back to Tudor times. What do all these Epstein-like island scandals mean for the West?
You could even say, some people say, ballet was an early form of pornography. They dressed men to make the male crotch look pronounced in those tight outfits. That came from the Western elite as a form of light pornography of those times. Yes, you could say that kind of thing certainly existed. It is nothing new, not the first time. It is just more open now. But you have to understand, this is a little different. First, a bit about Epstein's Island, then we will talk about Epstein himself. What does Epstein's Island mean? That is what was exposed. But you need to get the message. If this had happened 100 years ago, there would have been a revolution in America. In any European country, there would have been a revolution if it were openly known that the elite were Satanists, people who raped and killed, and possibly, if you believe even 10% of witness accounts, according to those witnesses, they even ate children. That is cannibalism. That would have been a revolution. In any country, because of strict Christian roots, no population would have tolerated that. Revolutions and uprisings happened over much less than this. The worst thing for any king, and for our emperors too, was to be excluded from the church. The church would come and expel them. You are no longer part of the church. You would completely lose the legitimacy to rule. That was the greatest fear for any ruler. And now they openly promote Satanism. You also need to understand one more point. For example, when Trump put out images portraying himself as Christ, and when he went after the Pope, everyone was looking at that bird. There, look at the bird. What happened over there? Boucher, the new Attorney General of America, who oversees the prosecution's office, gave an interview and said bluntly, "We unsealed all the documents," which is false. They have over 2 million documents, and the documents they did unseal had all the criminals' names redacted and openly the victims' names as well, exactly the opposite of what the law required of them. That was done to pressure the victims into shutting up, to make them leave, or to drive them to kill themselves out of shame for being victims. Many families of those victims knew nothing about it, or simply would not accept it. So they exposed the victims and covered up the perpetrators. And what did he say? First thing, we unsealed everything. Again, that is the primary lie. We see no basis for criminal charges. There is no crime here, he said. The whole case is closed. That's it. This is the satanic elite directly telling the people, pardon my language, we do not give a damn about you. We will do whatever we want with your children, and you cannot do anything about it. You are powerless. This is direct open mockery of the people. Basically, we are the all-powerful elite. Everything is in our hands, and you can do nothing. Pay taxes, obey orders. End of discussion. Move along. You are dismissed. That is what the elite told the whole world. There is not just one Epstein. There are multiple people in that role. I remember a case 5 or 6 years ago, maybe a bit more, in Arizona. The local police were involved, and the federal police did not care. Some 300,000 plus missing children in America, that's an open issue. And no one, they do not care. And only God knows how many more children are being brought in illegally. Mel Gibson financed the film Sound of Freedom. About the real story to the FSB agents? No, not the Federal Security Service, I mean the Federal Bureau of Investigation agents, who the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation resigned, went to Colombia and found a partner there, a former mobster who was also trying to atone for his sins. They started a hunt. At first, they were searching for the sister of a boy who had been taken from the street and shipped to America. This happens all the time. Small children, attractive children, get stolen and taken to America. No major theater chain picked up the film. Instead, critics attacked it. He financed it entirely out of his own pocket. The film only found its way into small independent theaters run by private owners. Hollywood absolutely refused to touch it. Why? Because it hits too close to home. Because they are involved in it. Those children then disappear. Nothing is left of them. So local authorities in Arizona found a ranch where there were 180 children. These were children the pedophiles had kept and abused. When they were done, they handed them over and effectively rented other children. I remember the local sheriff saying, if there is one, there are others. The federal authorities are blocking our work. And there are many such cases. That kind of elite exists. Now let's talk about what Epstein was. He was a man with his fingers in every business. He was not just an agent of Mossad. Mossad, the Central Intelligence Agency. The British Secret Intelligence Service. They are like three heads of one three-headed dragon. Those are the three heads. At the end of the day, it is all the same body. According to those very documents, he negotiated between Israel and Morocco, Israel and Mongolia, Israel and the Ivory Coast. He ran around as a diplomat, tried to contact Lavrov to get to Putin, even arranged meetings with oligarchs about how to move the Russian state. He was involved in everything. He was not just running prostitution rings and bringing in children. He was a connected man, who he was, and where he came from. He was not someone who suddenly became a billionaire and then started doing all this. Obviously, bigger people and even states stood behind him. So you have to look deeper, and the fact they did not edit that, I think, hits even harder when you realize who you are dealing with. This is not just child prostitution and disposing of bodies. When they were arresting him, he had ordered 2,000 kilograms of acid to his island. Yeah.
To clean the pipes, apparently. They needed to clean everything out. Yes, to dissolve the remains. Part of his house opened through the floor. There was a door that led straight out over the sea. So it was a good place to dump things. That is the kind of people we are talking about. But he was connected to absolutely everyone. Not just through prostitution, not just through those children, but politically, diplomatically, and economically as well. Before he rose, his specialty was laundering money and evading taxes for big oligarchs. So those are the kind of people. This gives a glimpse of who runs the West.
Yes, we have been discussing these problems, and I want to say that the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender movement is banned as an extremist organization in Russia. Yes, yes, yes. Yes. Stanislav, when we talk, I am not even speaking about Western elites in general, but specifically about American elites. Am I right that elites in the American sense are something different compared to what exists in, say, Germany, France, or even the United Kingdom? In the West, there is a synthesis. You mentioned Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, BlackRock, I think everyone names them now. These are the largest transnational corporations based in the United States, or at least partly based there. There is a very wealthy financial speculative capital. We are talking, as I understand it, about trillions of dollars.
Many trillions of dollars. Many trillions. $11 trillion, I believe, just in BlackRock.
The United States is home to the headquarters of the structures we just named and others, about 10 to 15 of these largest transnational corporations that handle tens of trillions of dollars. Yes, a lot. Furthermore, but that is not all. Compared to them, I understand Trump is basically a small-time player. Well, he has also been involved in financial speculation his whole life. So, how much does he have? Hundreds of millions of dollars. As president, he is involved in that and has made certain statements. Sometimes stock prices fall, sometimes they rise. Take Bitcoin, for example. He profits from that. His people are involved in it. But to those big players, he is small fry. By the way, he has been a showman his whole life. American elites, as I understand it, are that financial speculative capital. They are representatives of the show industry, show business, and that includes Hollywood, right? Strangely enough.
I would not call Trump a small-time player. Initially, long before he became president, he had already been a billionaire for a long time. Yes, he may have had $5 or $6 billion, but he was a billionaire. He moved in those circles repeatedly. But if you owe a bank billions, who owns the bank? Are you or the bank the owner of your own fate? Because it is very hard for any bank to write off that kind of money. When he was president-elect, but not yet president, he issued a cryptocurrency, a Trump coin. And right on the day of his inauguration, Melania issued the Melania coin. To be clear, it was not, as they put it, an investment coin. Buy it, they said. We are one big family. They bought up about $30 billion worth, which they then converted and funneled into real money. The price of that coin has now fallen 97% from its peak. He made $30 billion from that, with his market play, handled by the investors and bankers he hired. I do not even know how many family members he has. They are all billionaires. Let United States not forget that. Just him. More than 3,000 market transactions. He admitted that. An additional $4 billion. He is not a small-time player. This is a man with a net worth of around $40 to $50 billion. And it is growing very fast because of that. I am not even counting his sons or his daughters. This is just him. He is not a small-time player. He is not a millionaire, he is one of those billionaires, in the same billionaire class. And regarding the European elite, you have to understand, there is no separate European elite here. What exists is an elite created by the Americans. Americans. I have about 5 minutes, I just need to make 6 calls, but to understand, from 1948 until the 1990s, the Americans held power over Europe, not only Western Europe, through the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, and even over neutral countries via Operation Gladio. Starting with the Nazis, who at first created partisan detachments, they moved those partisan units everywhere. But using those partisan units, made up of local irregulars, who held real loyalty to Washington, to carry out political terror in those various countries. And not only against the left, they also used them against the right. So the right would fight the left, and they could control it. When de Gaulle began negotiating with the French settlers in Algeria to let them go, because he understood they would start coming to France, reproduce 3 times faster than the French, and swamp United States all. We did not need them. Some officers rebelled, seized power in Algeria, and tried to destroy de Gaulle and his family, with help from hardline supporters. Yes, they tried to shoot him and his whole family. De Gaulle was a military man. He took it very seriously, understood everything, wiped them all off the face of the earth, and expelled the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Moved the North Atlantic Treaty Organization to Belgium, not Paris, where it had originally been based. He gave them 1 month to get out of France, and pulled France completely out of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. End of shit. Just as no, Cernan.
France only fully returned to the North Atlantic Treaty Organization under Sarkozy. How long ago? Less than 20 years ago. So yes, that is how it was. And the Americans actually carried out a color revolution against him. A completely thorough color revolution. And they removed de Gaulle from power. Whatever people called him politically, he was in fact a thoroughly right-wing man, and they also tried to kill him and his entire family. That is how the Americans held power. Well, at the same time, because you cannot keep power like that forever, at the same time, they were raising a new generation. And Merkel, who was in East Germany, was one of those who showed up at the conferences. There are photos of her with Tari Somai. They are young, in various Soros camps. That is how she got in. Apparently, through another elite inside East Germany, who were also partly traitorous. And they raised up that whole bunch that now holds power. They are all tied to American corporations. They operated in the United States of America. And when von der Leyen, who worked in the United States of America, says she feels as much at home there as in Germany, the one who made a deal with Trump to flee to the United States of America when her term ends, there is a very political case against her, an open €1 billion case, that she and her husband stole on vaccines and on contracts she signed illegally. Well, what can you say? These people do what is required of them. Frankly, if you look at them honestly, they hate their own people. They simply hate their own people. They destroy them and replace them. And here you have to understand how quickly this whole system works. I will be releasing this video as I go. There is a very simple move here. And we will have the same effect. Do not smirk about it. The same will happen to United States. Look. The 1950s, the 1960s, the United States of America was, of course, in a good position after the Second World War. But there was a moment in the United States of America, and it was the right time. The average family, and in the Soviet Union it was somewhat similar, lived on the salary of one person, one husband. The husband worked, the wife stayed at home, there were a lot of children, and they lived as middle class. If you wanted a new car, you did not need loans. You saved from an average salary for half a year and bought a new car with cash. Houses cost about 2 years' salary. A typical house, you could pay that off in 5 years. Easily. People bought and ate meat normally. Everything was within reach. Why? Because... And, of course, the American economy was in that position. That was a big advantage, because the rest of the world was still catching up. But mainly because wages were high. Rockefeller and others openly said they promoted feminism. They promoted feminism because once they convinced women that having children is awful, raising a family is awful, working in a factory or in an office where everyone hates each other, in that grayness, and where you will be thrown out at 55 or 60, maybe even forgotten before that. That was the best thing you could do in your life, they said. And the man? What the hell, family? Fuck anything that moves. That is much better. That is how it was. They broke up families, persuaded women to enter the workforce. He himself admitted that he had specifically asked for this, because the labor force doubled. Well, almost doubled. Wages fell. That was it. Now I can pay much lower wages for the same work. People are now much poorer. It is hard to raise children when both husband and wife work. The number of children is falling. And you want a car? Prices still go up, and wages go down. Loans, folks. Everything is bought on credit. We make even more money from this, like a bank. We could not give car loans before. Nobody would take them. Why would I need a loan? I would save for 5 months and have a new car. Now I take a loan and pay for this new car for 4 years, while it loses 20% of its value the moment I sign the contract. I mean, to sell it back. And that is how it is. But what is the problem? This only affects one generation. The second generation becomes much smaller, because there are no children. What does that mean? Wages start to rise again. What step should we take now? We bring in a huge number of people from other countries to work. You start at the bottom, although when you can, you bring in engineers and scientists. But most of those you bring are ordinary working people, laborers. They will work in factories, on farms, and so on. But what is the problem? What is the problem? The average person who grew up in a village, who has lived there all his life and can feed his family, does not want to leave that village. So what do you do to motivate him to leave the village? Let the United States start a war there. A civil war. That is the best. A civil war. A divided people. We drain their resources and create a huge workforce that is hungry and ready to come work for United States like modern slaves and replace our population, which we have already convinced not to reproduce. This is how the cycle we all live in begins. We see the same thing in Russia. When people say, "I saw this in America," they suddenly say, "Oh, these are jobs Americans will not do. They are too low for them." Do we not hear that in Russia? We definitely hear it in Russia. It is the same type of people. There is no job a Russian person would not do. There is work he cannot do, because the wage is so low, he cannot survive on it. When you bring in temporary workers who will cram 20 people into one room and send their earnings abroad, they are ready to work like modern slaves. And at the same time, it hurts the economy, because there is the concept of how fast money circulates. Or rather, you work for me, at the factory I give you money, you turn it around and spend it, buying bread or a couch. That money goes to the shop, which pays its workers, who then go and buy bread or a car. It goes to my factory. And so the money keeps circulating in the economy. When workers come from another country, where does that money go? Not in this economy. All the money goes abroad, to someone else's economy, feeding someone else's economy. And that is a loss for society as a whole. And these big factories, corporations, oligarchs, they offload the social costs. When everyone gets poorer, crime rises, prices spiral out of control, the economy and social fabric collapse. They dump all those costs onto the state, whose tax revenues fall because wages are low and people do not buy anything. What value-added tax is there
when people have no money to spend. Minjin, is there
Derizer?
This is a system that starts feeding itself by destroying itself. In a couple of generations, a rich country becomes absolute poverty, rubble, and civil war. Mixing radically different cultures is extremely, extremely difficult. It can work only when outsiders come in tiny groups you can assimilate. When you pour them in by the millions, they never assimilate, they turn into ghettos, which later turn into uprisings against the same people. What we see in England, what we see in Belgium, what we see in Ireland, that is what will happen to United States too if we do not control it. They brought in 500,000 Indians. Yeah, maybe they are relatively calm. But it is still a different culture. Even if genetically they are Slavs, actually. We even share the same haplogroup, interestingly. R1A. Indians also have R1A. Still, culturally, we are very different. If you bring in 20 or 30,000 Indians a year, they will assimilate. Just like if you bring 30 or 40,000 Russians to India. They will assimilate. But if you bring 30 million Russians, they will create a Russian country inside India, and nobody there will tolerate that. If we do the same to ourselves, the same will happen here. It is human nature. So, if we do not control it, it will destroy United States from within, just as it is destroying the entire West. Well, better to learn and somehow control it. In Ukraine, they have brought in 500,000 Indians now. They say even Pakistanis and Bangladeshis. There have even been photos released showing them working with TCK. Yes, and advertisements in India on huge billboards saying, "Come to Ukraine, start a family for the future." And a Ukrainian girl stands there, a pretty girl. What does that mean? And publicly they say they want to bring 9 million of them. They want to increase the population by 50% compared to now. Well, that is destruction, the destruction of any existing culture there. The same thing happened when Merkel brought in 1 million men, because almost all of them were men, 90% were young men, and the riots began. In Cologne that new year, they raped more than 1,000 women, and they told the police chief to erase all the video. And he said, no way, and he went public with it, because damn, women were being raped left and right. By the crowds of migrants that Merkel had just brought in, no society can survive like that, and we also need to learn to look at this. I am not against immigration in small numbers of the right people, but you need the right people in amounts we can absorb and assimilate. Engineers, doctors, those are the people we need. There is no country that can have too many smart people. Brains are always needed, but a bunch of people who can only work with their hands, and even then without any skills, to dig holes. We already have plenty of those ourselves. We do not need to look far for them. We already have plenty of people here who can only dig holes. Let's start using our own, bringing in huge numbers from a completely different culture that do not want to assimilate into our shared culture. Well, our core is Russian culture, of course, but we have many other cultures as well. If you talk to Dagestanis and others, they do not want all those people either. Even if they are Sunnis themselves, they will say bluntly that these people are barbarians. This is not our culture, because they have their own culture too. It is partially mixed with Russian culture. What if you bring in foreigners who want to impose their own order? No one likes that. That's Iskins. If we do not handle this very carefully, we will end up on the same edge of civil war that turns into actual civil war, like in parts of Europe. And we also have an enemy that wants to wipe United States off the face of the earth. That is precisely what he wants. Why did the British Secret Intelligence Service recruit Tajiks in Crack City? To accelerate it even faster. They did it deliberately, picking from among all the peoples they could choose. They picked those who come here to work. They found them, recruited them, and sent them off. They did it intentionally. They could have taken, say, a Russian guy, or a Russian of Korean descent, or a Tatar, or someone like that. Well, they know how to stir up society, and they always operate that way.
If we give them fertile ground for this, they will destroy the United States even faster. We need to be realistic. The West should serve as the perfect example of what not to do, not something to emulate. Again, I am not against migration, but it should be the right kind of migration under the control of the right people. We must decide what we need. We do not have enough doctors. Okay, what kind of doctors? Go find those doctors. Educated people will assimilate much faster, because that is always the case. We need more physics professors. Let United States both train new physics professors and bring in others from abroad. People like that, yes, exactly. A huge mass of people who can only do manual labor and not even skilled factory work, just digging holes. We do not need that. We already had enough of those in the Soviet Union.
Stanislav, thanks a lot for being on the show.
My pleasure.